This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 40 or 50 years ago, it seemed that almost everyone smoked, and those who did smoke could smoke anywhere they pleased. In restaurants, public transportation, including airplanes, movie theaters, offices, they even smoked on TV. But as the proof mounted that cigarette smoking causes cancer and other diseases, not only did the number of smokers slowly decline, but opportunities for remaining smokers began to disappear. Today, even in North Carolina, a traditional tobacco state, you cannot smoke in most public places, and there is now a move afoot to limit the few remaining places where smokers can light up outside of their own homes and cars. Local proposals would ban smoking near government buildings. A second ordinance would ban all tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, which are not a tobacco product, from county parks and greenways. We're going to talk about why the proposed restrictions are coming about now and about programs to stop people from starting the habit and to help those who already smoke to quit in the face of tightened restrictions. But we wanted to know how the average person was reacting to these proposals, and so we sent associate producer Alexi Girodi out on the street to speak with some random individuals. And we start with Barbara, who has been a smoker for 20 years and was outside on a smoke break.
Smoking is my thing that I do, and I wouldn't want to impose it on other people. So I think that is probably a good thing. I do. I can smoke in the privacy of my own home and my car and certain things like that. But generally, if I'm out and about, I generally may smoke one or two cigarettes. So I think that it's a good thing. Same with all the health concerns and different things like that going on, and of course offending others. You know, I wouldn't want to be in that position, but. I think it's a good thing.
Does your health concern you at all with smoking?
Yes, and I'm in the process of cutting way back and on my way to quitting. So this is just my one foot that I've had today.
How long have you been smoking?
Since I was a teenager.
What do you think about the possible expansions?
I understand where they're coming from. I'm not crazy about it, but I can appreciate where they're coming from. Honestly, I'm indifferent because, again, it does inconvenience me, or I'm expecting that it will, but I also understand the rights of other people who don't want to be around it.
Have you heard about these expansions?
I just heard it from you.
What do you think of the possible legislation?
It would be good for me. I would support it in order to quit smoking. I've been trying since last few years, but have not been able to. So I would support this. If you are not allowed to smoke, then you will not feel like smoking. But if you are allowed to smoke, then you feel like smoking. So it's one way or the other. So if it's not allowed, then I'll obviously quit.
Barbara, Jason, and Surya, three people we found on the streets smoking, who shared their surprisingly understanding views of the proposed smoking bans that we'll talk about for the remainder of the hour, with Trevor Fuller, the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Welcome to the program. Where have you been? Why haven't you been here before?
Well, thank you for having me, Mike.
You're welcome.
I'm glad to come back anytime.
Okay. Marcus Plesha is health director for Mecklenburg County. Good morning to you.
Morning.
James Garges is director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. Welcome back.
Morning. Thank you.
And Dr. Derek Raghavan, MD, is president of the Levine Cancer Institute at Carolina's healthcare system and a professor of medicine at the UNC School of Medicine Charlotte campus. Welcome back to you as well.
Hi.
First of all, are any of you surprised at how easygoing all of these smokers are about these regulations? Now, I'll grant you, this is not a scientific sample, just a random sample of three people, but they were all smokers and they all said, no problem.
Well, I'm not particularly surprised. You know, 70% of smokers have made an attempt to quit in the last year. Most people who smoke cigarettes do want to quit smoking, and I think you heard that in the comments of many of the people that you just highlighted. I also think smokers, like everybody else, are considerate. They don't want to expose people to secondhand smoke. There's a misperception that this is a policy that will just be uniformly opposed by smokers, and that's not true. That's not what we see from the research. Many smokers think these kinds of policies and ordinances are a very good idea.
Well, I have two questions about that then, because when this first began to happen, when we began to restrict places where people could smoke, there was a hue and cry from smokers about this. Why has their attitude changed?
Well, I think it's changing social norms, and that's really what these kind of policies are about, making it clear that there are reasons that we don't want people smoking any place and that we need to protect other people from the hazardous health effects of secondhand smoke.
And my second question kind of follows the comments of the last person we heard in that piece of tape, Surya, who said, you know, if you can't smoke, you won't. If you can, you will. Is this one way to help people stop if they really want to by making it impossible for them to smoke anywhere?
Well, yes, but I understand the resistance that some have to that. There are some who say government should not be in the business of being a nanny state, mm-hmm. and that people should make their own choices about their health and any other activities that they engage in. Our point of view is, as a Board of County Commissioners, who is also the Board of Health for Mecklenburg County, that we have to take not so much of a laissez-faire approach, but we have to lean a little bit to get people to stop smoking in this case. Why? Because the costs of it are borne by the county in the form of our public health services that we provide, in the form of social services that we provide, and in the medical costs that we all pay for. So, yes, there is an intrusion to some degree, but it's one that we are statutorily required to perform.
And you're not saying you can't smoke in your car or in your home or in your own backyard. You're just saying that around other people in public spaces, you can't smoke. And so you're actually advocating for the other side as well. You're helping people who don't want to be around it.
Right. And insofar as government can lead by example, mm-hmm. this is an example of leading by example.
I want to come back to that later on. But you have two discrete proposals on the table, one for smoke-free government grounds, places around government buildings, and the other for tobacco-free parks. So as the chairman of the county commission, are both these ordinances coming from the commission, or are they coming from the health director at Mecklenburg County or elsewhere? Whose idea were these two proposals?
Well, I like to think of it as a joint idea because the health department is a part of the county that we are responsible for leading. And Dr. Plesha has been very explicit about the dangers faced in our community from smoking and its how it leads to chronic diseases that cost us money, mm-hmm. cost us lives. And so as a Board of County Commissioners, that's something that's important to us.
Why now?
Why now? Why not now? There is no time to wait. We see the increasing incidence of chronic disease in our population, and there's no better time than the present to try to put a stop to that.
Well, let me add, I mean, we've actually had restrictions through state legislation that have kept most local communities from passing these kinds of policies and ordinances, and much of that changed in 2010 when the state passed the ban on smoking in restaurants and bars. When I was actually in Raleigh at the time, and we actually wanted a ban on smoking in work sites, period, not just restaurants and bars. And the legislature was not willing to go quite that far, but they were willing then to relax some of these rules and make some of these decisions a local decision.
Mm-hmm. As you're with the Mecklenburg County Health Department.
That's correct.
And Mecklenburg's community health assessment identified chronic disease as the number one health priority for the use for the county. How big a contributing factor is that study to these measures at this time?
Oh, that's what drove this. I mean, the public has told us that chronic diseases are their number one concern, and that's what we should work on. So when we started to think about what can we do about chronic disease, the first thing that comes to mind is smoking.
How big a contributing factor is smoking then? Is it the number one contributing factor to chronic
disease? Oh, it is definitely the number one contributing factor. It causes probably one out of every five deaths. You know, you mentioned how 40, 50 years ago everybody smoked. In that 40 to 50 years, 20 million people in the United States have died of tobacco-related diseases. We consider this an epidemic. We consider this tobacco smoke and tobacco use over the last 50 years a public health catastrophe, and it's time that we did something about it.
Wow. I'm sure that you are on the same page as the head of the Levine Cancer Institute, Dr. Raghavan.
Yes, absolutely. I think everything I've heard this morning I agree with.
So put this into perspective because, you know, smoking is still legal. They still sell tobacco products. You see them in all the convenience stores. If it is an epidemic, if it's the leading cause of death, if all these millions of people have died, why do we still and you know, and we're going to talk about this, that it can be directly linked to lots of different diseases. why do we still sell it? Why do we still consume it?
You know, I think that we don't have as many public officials as visionary as Trevor and his colleagues. There are a lot of places that just sit on the sidelines. Now, my role here is to talk about the scientific parts. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who gets into health policy, but I think the answer to your question is there's a big tobacco lobby. A lot of money changes hands, and it takes courage for politicians to stand up to it. I think people have, over the years, confused two issues, the issue of paternalism versus civil rights. And when people discuss that with me, the way I kind of think about it is the civil right to smoke is offset by the civil right to breathe clean air. And so, as you said a moment ago, Mike, nobody's trying to force people not to smoke in the privacy of their homes, although I would hope, as a taxpayer, that we could discourage them from doing it. As Trevor said a minute ago, this is, apart from the fact that it kills people, you know, in the USA, there are more than 150,000 deaths a year from lung cancer. It's crazy that people still smoke. There are some people who believe that the kids in college are just beginning to think it's cool again, which is a tragedy. In the last 40 years, the one area, and I say this here rather than at home where my wife can hit me, the one area where men have been smarter than women is in the area of smoking. In the last 40 years, men have actually reduced their smoking, and the incidence of lung cancer has started to fall. In women, it's gone up about 10% in the last 40 years. It's just plateaued now.
And in fact, more women die of lung cancer, I believe, than breast cancer.
Which is a tragedy.
Do you think women know that?
You know, they should. I mean, people like me talk about it all the time. Now, I'm boring and probably nobody listens to me, but I've been saying it and my colleagues have. It's an awful thing to think that the medical profession has brought down the death rate from breast cancer at the same time as women smoke more as a gesture of independence and defiance, have now pushed that up to be their number one cancer killer. The other thing I would say, Mike, is that it isn't just lung cancer. There are many other disorders that are caused by smoking.
Which we'll talk about. James Garges is also here, and he's with Park and Rec. And I know that you started this job 8 years ago, and one of the first things that you did was to remove the candy machines or the bad snack machines from all the park facilities.
And soft drinks.
And sugar-based soft drinks had suddenly disappeared from park and recreation centers. And you say that discouraging tobacco use in our parks, greenways, and facilities is the next step in all of this. Why? And why 8 years later? Why not 8 years ago?
Well, we started with the tobacco policy actually 2 years ago in the previous administration. We started to work on this. And Romero Bearden, which is tobacco-free, the commission at that time passed that legislation for us over a year ago now. And I think the issue in terms of why now is I think at this point with Dr. Plesha, and the work that we have on chronic disease as a whole really has given us the impetus to move it forward. In the previous administration, you know, we were asked, provide more information. Why do you want to do this? And my comment was that the majority of people will support a tobacco ban in parks. So we did a scientific survey, and that's exactly what we found. 72% of the residents of Mecklenburg County support it. So with Dr. Plesha's work, we were really able to bring it full steam.
I have a couple of other questions, many other questions actually, about the smoking ban that relates to the parks in particular, and we'll get those questions answered and more when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas, blood supplier to 22 of the region's hospitals. Local donors help meet blood needs as the summer supply drops and demand increases. CBCC.us. The once distant third world is no longer so distant, and the recent Ebola outbreak in Africa clearly illustrates that. We have American volunteers working there every day, and they can be easily exposed and have now been exposed to the virus, and air travel has increased the possibility of transporting the disease. We have two Americans, one from Charlotte in an Atlanta hospital right now being treated for this, and hospitals across the country are gearing up to take care of possible outbreaks of this and other diseases. And we'll talk about disease outbreak protocols tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Michael Brown's death sparks a national conversation about what happens when police do not reflect the communities they serve. The Justice Department is investigating police tactics across the country, police, race, and the use of deadly force.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about two proposed smoking ordinances that would, not permit, you would no longer be permitted to smoke around government buildings. And it's a little more extensive than that. We'll talk about that in a second. And one would prohibit all tobacco products from being used in our parks or greenways. And we're talking about that with Trevor Fuller, who's the chairman of the Mecklenburg County Commission, Dr. Marcus Plesha, health director for Mecklenburg County, James Gargis, director of Mecklenburg County Park and Rec, and Dr. Derek Raghavan, president of the Levine Cancer Institute at Carolina's healthcare system. In the parks, you're not just talking about cigarettes. You're talking about banning all tobacco products.
That's right. Yeah, and the issue there is trying to make sure that we model for young people healthy behaviors. And I think doing that and banning all tobacco products leads to that.
But now the argument can be, I think, successfully made that if you're smoking, you could be interfering with somebody else's right to breathe. But if you are using snuff or if you are chewing tobacco, how is that harming the people around you?
Well, again, I'd lean on Dr. Plesha's comments here and Dr. Radovan, but you know, we're talking about modeling, and it's the same in professional golf. They have these issues with people taking snuff, young people getting involved in these things, and I think the litter, the spitting, the bad behavior that goes along with some of these other tobacco products are not the kinds of things that we want to see in what I call health centers, which are our parks and our greenways. So healthy habits, I think, lead to healthy people and save lives. And so that's why the whole ban on tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, is proposed for parks.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we asked listeners on Facebook how they feel about the proposed smoking bans. And Christina writes, banning e-cigarette use outdoors is ridiculous. It's not smoke, it's water vapor. Cigarettes are one thing, vaporizers are another. Do either of the two physicians want to chime in on that?
Well, I just make the comment that Jim Gargis was right in saying that one of the big issues here is modeling for children. You know, little kids emulate mom and dad. There's incontrovertible evidence that the children of smokers smoke much more than the children of non-smokers. We model the behavior of our children based on ourselves.
But is there a harmful effect to an e-cigarette that we know about at this point?
We think the verdict is still out. There's a lot of concern about electronic cigarettes. I think there's also some hope about electronic cigarettes. But you have to step back and think about the fact that 40, 50 years ago, we didn't think there was any harm with regular cigarettes, and we've learned the hard way that there is. So I would urge some caution in this jump to say these are fine, everybody should use them. You know, electronic cigarettes do contain nicotine. That's the main ingredient. Nicotine is highly addictive, and one of our concerns is this going to be people's new form of tobacco use, or is it just going to be a pipeline to get people to start smoking regular cigarettes?
Isn't Nicorette gum a nicotine delivery
yes,
system?
Yes, but Nicorette gum is carefully monitored. It is approved by the FDA. These are medications. There is a mistaken belief that electronic cigarettes are the same as nicotine replacement products. That is not true.
Yeah, you brought something up that's kind of fascinating, particularly to younger people who don't remember this, but I remember people smoking on live television all the time. You would see them through a haze of cigarette smoke in many cases. And I remember commercials where doctors would stand up and say, two out of three doctors recommend Lucky Strike, and that smoking was good for you. Looking back on it and knowing now what we know about what tobacco products do to your body, how could anybody have ever even put that forward? Why would doctors not know that? Seriously, I mean, breathing in smoke on a regular basis could be good for you. How could they possibly have believed that?
Well, it was marketed extremely well.
These are doctors, not
advertising. Doctors are just like anybody else. Doctors, you know, you can market things to doctors. And, you know, cigarette products were marketed very well. They were considered to be cool, sophisticated, sexy back in the 1950s. And they're still marketed that way. In fact, now we see a lot of these tobacco products. You know, this issue that Jim raised that we're really very concerned about use of tobacco products by kids. 9 out of 10 adult smokers started smoking when they were before the age of 18. That is the population that we really want to target, and we really want to send a message that smoking is not cool, smoking is not sophisticated. But we are working against a very sophisticated industry. You know, the latest thing now, particularly with electronic cigarettes, is they're being marketed as candy cherry-flavored electronic cigarettes. I mean, that is a clear attempt to get more children to start smoking.
And all young people feel that they are immortal. They have no concept of what things, the ravages of time can do to you. And Dr. Raghavan, I know that we now know beyond a shadow of a doubt that cigarette smoking causes cancer. What other diseases can be blamed on the consumption of cigarette smoke?
Well, cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, strokes are associated with smoking. We know about lung cancer very commonly, but in fact, cancer of the lip, tongue, throat, esophagus, and stomach are all linked to smoking. It is said, and there's some good data to support the idea, that leukemia and lymphoma, the blood cancers,
really
occur more commonly in people who smoke. Even prostate cancer, if you compare smokers and non-smokers, there's a higher frequency in those people. And then chronic pulmonary disease. If you look at the kids of smokers who are heavy smokers who smoke in the house, on average, they're shorter than the children of non-smokers. So, I mean, it's a very insidious, pervasive problem. Now, the other thing that Dr. Plessia commented on was the issue of marketing. One of the very sad things is if you look at our community at the moment, you know, we're seeing some pretty sad things happening in Ferguson, Missouri. The reality is that there is a discrepancy, as I understand it, in that area of people who are unemployed. People who are unemployed smoke more. They do things to help pass the time. If you look at the African American community, they are being targeted by the cigarette producers very actively. And what we now know is the highest incidence of lung cancer and the worst survival rates are in African American men. Interestingly, African American women have actually, as a big group, been smarter than white women in that they smoke a lot less. And what's a little bit frightening is that they get very close to equivalent rates. So we also know, and this is the point I'd like to make, there are other causes of lung cancer. It isn't just smoking. When you look at the causes of lung cancer in our community, more than 90% of cases are associated with smoking, but there will be other things such as industrial pollutants, radon exposure. So we feel that getting rid of smoking, again, I don't want to get into the policy side, but just as a physician scientist, not having smoking around is going to cut cost to the community, is going to reduce deaths from cancer.
Well, Dr. Plessia, you say that 20% of adults in Mecklenburg County still smoke and that by cutting that rate in half would have a major impact. What would that impact be?
So we estimate that if we could cut the rate in half from 20% to 10%, we could save 600 lives a year, and we could save about $350 million a year in combined medical and lost productivity costs.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
What does the county spend on it? What does the county spend on health care for people who are—
It's hard to tease out the actual cost to county government, but the savings would be $350 million across the entire community.
Hmm. Now, the rate of smoking, I believe, has declined a lot since 1960 or so. Is it continuing to decline? And what has been the impact on health in that decline?
So it's continued to decline in men. It's plateaued in women. So women were behind men in giving up smoking. What's quite clear, every study that's looked at communities where people have stopped smoking, every study has shown that the prevalence of illness has gone down. So a nice, simple monitor would be looking at chronic pulmonary disease in communities that have stopped smoking. In Glasgow, Scotland, they had citywide changes and did some measurements and showed very clearly the number of visits with chronic pulmonary disease, bronchitis, stuff like that, pneumonia, all went down. If you look at children in an environment where people have stopped smoking, they have a lot less chronic pulmonary infection, less asthma, and so on. So it's a no-brainer that if you stop smoking, things improve. Even the chance of getting lung cancer drops with increased time since you've discontinued.
So if you stop and you live 30 years later, then your chance of getting lung cancer from that point going forward is less than it would have been had you continued to smoke?
It gets close to as if you'd never smoked. It's not quite there, but I mean, it's really worthwhile. If you stop smoking and really, and it's not the old, I can quit smoking, I do it all the time. If you consistently stop smoking, then your chance of getting lung cancer drops dramatically, and similarly, the chance of getting significant vascular disease drops.
Now, you bring up an interesting point. I can quit smoking. I do it all the time. Smoking is highly addictive, as you just said, Dr. Blusher. Nicotine is a highly addictive substance. So people, even when they want to smoke, have these irrepressible urges to smoke, which is why, even though we've banned smoking in buildings and airplanes and places like that, people can't wait to get off the plane or go outside on a cigarette break to take a smoke because it's driving them crazy not being able to. If you further restrict that, what does that do to those people?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the more difficult you make it to smoke, the more likely people are to quit. And that's one of the main reasons that we've instigated, that we would like to instigate this policy. As I said earlier, most people who smoke do want to quit, and they've tried to quit in the last year. We also, you know, we do want to be compassionate towards people who smoke. They do have an addiction. We want to be hard on the problem, easy on the people. And that's where nicotine replacement therapy comes in. You know, it's not, we are concerned that people have an addiction and we need to be able to help them in some way deal with the addiction. The nice thing about the policy that would come in place for local government workers is we know that the government health plans all cover nicotine replacement therapy. So people, it's not that people are going to be sitting at their desks suffering because they need to get out and get some nicotine. They can use nicotine replacement therapy that can get them through the day.
The smoke-free government grounds ordinance says, and I quote here, there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Would you agree with that, Dr. Raghavan?
I agree. Yeah, it's true. You know, there isn't a level. The chemicals that get blown out in smoke are carcinogenic. We can't identify a level of how much carcinogenic stuff is okay. Imagine my offering you a soft drink, a seltzer water, and I say, you know, this is really good. It's cheap. And the only problem with it is it has a small amount of carcinogen in, but don't worry about it because it's cheap. You wouldn't use it because you'd say, wait a second, I don't care how much carcinogen is there, cancer-causing substance is there, I don't want it. So, you know, the reality is, from a litigation standpoint, there is no defined level where you can say, yep, this building is clean, so it's better to have a building that doesn't have smoke in it, period.
Let me share some more of these comments that have come in before and during the program on Facebook. Anita writes, about time. Why should I suffer because someone chooses to have a habit that kills people? Sarah, totally in favor. I cannot stand walking or biking along the Greenway by CMC with all the smokers. It's disgusting. Why should I have to deal with the secondhand smoke? Let me ask you this. In a public place, in an outdoor setting, like a Greenway or a park, where the smoke dissipates into the atmosphere relatively quickly, is secondhand smoke a problem? It would be in an enclosed space, but yeah, is it a problem outdoors?
I think the truth is we don't know for sure. I mean, I've certainly walked through clouds of smoke,
sure,
when people are smoking here and there, and I don't know what the safe level is. So what I do, Mike, is I take a deep breath before I get there and hold it until I'm on the other side. I've become quite good at this, like the commercial with the kid underwater.
Right. Is walking through a cloud of cigarette smoke, secondhand smoke, any worse for you than walking past a barbecue grill or walking past leaves burning in a field?
So I think the answer is, again, there are substances in tobacco that are actively known carcinogens. Now, if you go into the issue of well-done meat, overcooked meat has its own set of problems. I'd be only too pleased, as long as you invite Trevor to come back again. We'll come back and talk to you about the dangers of overcooked meat.
Well, yeah, well, you're talking about the char broiling a steak, and there are carcinogens in the char.
Correct.
But what about the smoke?
So if there's carcinogens in the char and they're activated and it comes up as a kind of set of particulate matter, it's probably bad for you. And I think the key here is, you know, I would put it to you this way. If you think about playing Russian roulette, the chance of knocking yourself off with six bullets in six chambers is higher than one. That doesn't mean I'd be at the front of the line to play Russian roulette with only one bullet. The only way I'd consider it would be with no bullets, and I still wouldn't do it because of the risk that there might be a bullet there. It's right. Playing with fire, and so I think it's a bad idea.
Adam writes, this is just silly. People need to grow up. Someone smoking outdoors doesn't make anyone else suffer, and I have never been a smoker. How many comments like that, Trevor Fuller, are you hearing from people?
I'm hearing some. But, you know, what I say to those folks is, again, we as a Board of Health have to lead by example. And if we are to simply act as if this is not a problem, act as if this is not a public health concern, what good are we? I mean, what are we doing here if we're not trying to encourage people to engage in healthy behavior?
You said this earlier, and I want to come back to it because you just said it again. We as a Board of Health, and you are the head of the County Commission. How is it – re-explain how it is that the County Commission is a Board of Health.
So in most counties in North Carolina, there is a Board of County Commissioners and a Board of Health that has a policy-making function. Back in the mid-70s, there was legislation at the state level to allow Mecklenburg County to assume the role of the Board of Health. So now the county commissioners serve as the Board of Health for Mecklenburg County. That is not true for every other county. There are some other counties that have a consolidated human services board, but Mecklenburg County has kind of been in the lead of this.
Okay. AB writes, as a runner, I would love to see smoking banned on all walking and biking trails. Running through a cloud of smoke is disgusting. James emails, banning smoking? How about banning the awful fumes I get at times from the ridiculous perfumes and colognes some people wear? How about banning screaming kids? Let's get a perfume-free, kid-free environment. My smoke outside will not harm anyone. How about banning car exhaust in public places?
Well, you know, just a comment that I'd make, and I think one of the people that you spoke with on the street, many smokers understand the issue and are respectful when they smoke. And what we find is if you go to Romare Bearden Park and you're sitting there and you're looking at and you're having a concert and you've got 4,000 or 5,000 people around you, why should others be subjected to smoke in an environment like that, whether it's secondhand smoke or just the annoyance of it? And so when we banned tobacco products at Romare, we have very, very, very few issues. Most people, oh, I didn't realize it. Fine, I'll be glad I put it out. Smokers understand this issue.
And that's James Gargis, is the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. We're also here with Dr. Derek Ragavan, president of Levine Cancer Institute, who has to leave us now because he has an appointment to get to. We'll continue our conversation with Trevor Fuller and Dr. Marcus Plesha as well in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and James McElroy and Deal for over a half century providing legal services and counsel to individuals and businesses. JMDLaw.com. Michael Brown's death sparks a national conversation about what happens when police don't reflect the communities they serve. The Justice Department is investigating police tactics across the country. So new questions about police, about race, and the use of deadly force, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes to 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation about new smoking regulations, you can get us through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, and we are coming right back.
We all know, but we don't like to say aloud, that sometimes patients are seen as revenue, not people.
There's always been a profit motive in medicine.
I'm Kai Rosdahl, Modern Medicine and Money. Next time on Marketplace, we'll have the rest of the day's business news, of course, and the numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Trevor Fuller is with us. He's the chair of the County Commission. James Gargas is the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. Dr. Marcus Plesha is a health director for Mecklenburg County. And Dr. Derek Raghavan, who's going to stay for one more comment, is president of Levine Cancer Institute. He has to leave because he has another appointment to go to. But you wanted to make a point about that last emailer who said, my smoking outdoors isn't hurting anyone.
And that's the sad, sad thing. This guy has managed to ignore everything that we've said and that's going around the community right now. It's hurting him. This puts him at risk of COPD, chronic pulmonary disease, and maybe lung cancer and a stroke or a heart attack.
But that's his choice, right?
It's his choice, but it's sad that he thinks that there is no victim in this. Even if he doesn't believe that blowing smoke in my face is going to hurt me, it's going to hurt him, and it's sad that he hasn't figured that out.
And you mentioned before we in the break that this is going to cost the community, because you said when he – not if. You said when he gets sick in 10 years or 15 years, it's going to cost the community.
Billions of dollars, a cost to us, the taxpayers, the community, by people who have this habit that makes no sense.
Dr. Derek Raghavan, thank you. And you mentioned, Dr. Plesha, a few segments ago that what the cost to the community would be, or how the savings to the community would be if we cut the smoking rate by half to 10%. Why does the community pick up the tab?
Well, because we're a society. We take care of people who are sick. I mean, I think that's a good tradition for us. I also think that's why increasingly we're seeing that the public is very supportive of these kinds of measures. You know, we really, as your public health department, as your county public health department, we see this issue of tobacco control as our responsibility. We have good evidence-based strategies to reduce the use of tobacco in our community, and we really need to push for those, and the time is now. You had mentioned, or perhaps Derek had mentioned, the reduction in the number of people who've smoked since the 1950s, but it's very important to note that in the last 5 years, that's leveled off. We're not seeing those reductions, and yet we do have the strategies. We do have evidence-based approaches, and they're effective, and we need to push for those a lot harder.
And this is entirely anecdotal, but I do see a lot of younger people in their late teens, early 20s, smoking, just as it were, as though it were 1945 all over again, because it has gotten this patina of being cool. Why? Where's that coming from?
It's marketing.
But you don't see any advertising anywhere.
Oh, I mean, tobacco products are marketed in all kinds of ways. It's one of the most sophisticated industries as far as how they market their products.
Trevor Fuller, we started this program by hearing from three random people on the street, all of whom were smokers, all of whom had no problem whatsoever with this ban because they said their right to smoke does not trump others' right to be smoke-free. What have you heard from your constituents as you have brought these policies up, these proposed regulations up?
Surprisingly, very little. Most people who I talk to about it have sort of a shrug of the shoulders kind of reaction. Well, okay, we expect you to do that. I have not heard much in the way of pushback, as you mentioned. Even smokers acknowledge that they need to respect others, that others don't like to smoke, don't like to be around smoke. And so I have not received a lot of pushback. Now, we'll have a public hearing on September 2nd at our county commission meeting, and we'll hear what people have to say. I suspect that we won't hear much in the way of pushback. There are some who say that the ban is too broad because it will cover not only Mecklenburg County-owned facilities, but also city-owned facilities, town-owned facilities, any government facilities in Mecklenburg County. And to that extent, some say perhaps it's an overreach. But my response to those arguments is, again, we serve an important role as the Board of Public Health in Mecklenburg County. And Mike, I think this is similar to us controlling infectious disease, which nobody has any problem with us doing, imposing regulations that limit people's behavior so as to limit infectious disease. This is no different. So there's some pushback, but not very much.
But as James Gargas did when he first took over at Park and Rec, he eliminated unhealthy snack food machines and he eliminated soda machines with sugared sodas in them. There are people who say that certain artificial sweeteners cause cancer or other problems in the body, and we all know we have an obesity epidemic in this country, and it's fueled in large part by people eating too much of the wrong thing, like fast food, etc. We don't ban those things.
Well, let's be clear about tobacco use, though. It is very clear that tobacco use is harmful, and it's very clear that we have good strategies that are evidence-based and effective. You know, one of the best examples of this is the smoking ban in restaurants and bars. We've seen almost 20% reductions in emergency room use for cardiovascular disease symptoms since that ban went into place. Now, that's not coincidence. We've seen other communities. There's a couple of communities in the United States where they passed these kinds of bans. They saw these reductions in people visiting the emergency room, mostly for cardiovascular disease. Then in two cases, they rescinded the ban, and the rates went right back up. So that's not coincidence. And that's the thing about tobacco control. You know, we are going after this issue because there's so much evidence that it's the right thing to do. It is our responsibility to take this on.
I mean, people who go to the parks, particularly parks like Freedom Park and McAlpine Park, are going because they want to exercise, they want to play sports, they want to be healthy. They're healthy, conscious people. But Romare Bearden, which is the park where smoking is banned and has been banned since it opened, it's kind of a walk-through park. You can go from Tryon Street to whatever that street behind the park is and just be on your way from one place to another, just as you would use a city sidewalk, on which I don't believe smoking is yet banned. Is that correct?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. So explain to me the difference, and because greenways are also highways for pedestrians and bicyclers, not unlike a sidewalk. How is going down the greenway any different from going down a public sidewalk?
Well, I think the issue is that parks and greenways are places of health. They go to the greenway for a healthy experience, and so we want them to have that healthy experience, and they should not be exposed to smoking. When they're on the greenway and they're there with their families or in the park with their families when they're walking through, the children shouldn't see this poor behavior. And so if we model best behavior, good healthy practices at all of our parks, it's going to help everybody, and I think it will reduce the incidences of all the deaths that we've been talking about.
In an urban park setting, in a downtown park like Romare Bearden, you're fighting other things that you breathe in other than cigarette smoke. You're fighting the pollution from automobile exhaust and other things as well. And there are days when we hear on the weather that if you're an outdoor exerciser or a bicycler, that the levels are so high that you shouldn't go out and do that. How is this helping? How is eliminating cigarette smoke in an urban park setting helping people stay healthy when they're also surrounded by exhaust?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, let's not lose sight of the fact of what a profound health issue tobacco smoke is. I mean, Dr. Raghavan touched on that. There are hundreds of carcinogens that have been identified in tobacco smoke. It is just a particularly detrimental substance. But you're right. There are other things out in the community that are harmful as well. But, you know, there are three reasons that these kinds of smoking policies work. And one is that they protect people from exposure to secondhand smoke. But let's not lose sight of the fact. I mean, one of the reasons we're doing this in our work sites on government grounds is because we want to help our government employees quit smoking. It works. I mean, the harder you make it to smoke, the more likely you are to push people over that threshold where they're quit. And then I think the most profound thing about this is we must begin to counter this idea that's being sold to our children that smoking is sophisticated, that it's glamorous, that it's sexy. It's not. And these kinds of policies, I mean, when you go into a park, which I think Jim has done a great job of redefining as a health environment, when you go into that kind of environment, you really shouldn't see people smoking. It's not healthy.
If these things pass as they are written, I believe, not only would these new regulations ban smoking around government buildings, they would also ban smoking in places around private companies where the public is invited inside. Let me see if I understand this, because quite often if I go to South Park, for instance, I will see people standing outside the food court entrance smoking cigarettes. Employees, people shopping, they'll step outside to smoke and then go back in to shop or go back to work. Is that what you're talking about, also banning it at places like that?
We're not there yet. Okay. I'll let Dr. Plesha look, what we're trying to do is the places over which we have – control. I use that term advisedly, but the areas where we have control, we want to say in these areas, we're not going to allow smoking. Now, if businesses, seeing that example, decide for themselves that they want to limit smoking in front of their buildings, or other landowners want to say for their land use, they don't want to have smoking. That's terrific. I hope it has that effect. All we're saying is the things over which we have control, we're going to say no smoking.
So a private concern could do this today. They wouldn't require government regulation. And you at the moment, I take it, are not planning to institute those regulations on those organizations.
We are not. Not
and so time. The regulation, if it goes into effect, it controls the environment around county buildings. How far around does that ban, how that restriction exist? How do you determine that if you're a smoker?
Well, what we're planning is there's government-owned property, so whatever the property lines are.
How would I know that as a pedestrian or as a person just passing through or there for jury duty or whatever I might
right.
be?
Now, I could be flip about this and say as a lawyer that that you can go down to the Register of Deeds and find out where the property lines are. I think it's going to be a matter of us with correct signage, with notice to people about where the areas are. I think that's how we can inform people about where smoking is not allowed.
But let's be clear. This is a 100% ban on the property. We're not going to have special smoking areas. That really defeats the purpose of these kinds of bans. People will have to go off the property, and it'll be very clearly stated in the signage. And this works. We're not the first community to do this. These kind of approaches work. People clearly understand where they can go and smoke. People follow the rules.
Trevor Fuller mentioned leading by example and the importance of a county board of health leading by example. And James Gargis, I know that you believe in that too, in the park system. Has this been done in other communities? And if so, what has the success been?
It has been. For instance, Cornelius passed a ban on tobacco products in their parks early on a couple of years ago when we were having these discussions. So right here in Mecklenburg County, others have taken that step. And I think this is a much broader approach for us. But many of the large cities, Philadelphia, Boston, are going tobacco-free in their parks. So I think, you know, that's not why we're doing it, but others are doing it. And I think the example that we can set here in North Carolina and certainly in Mecklenburg County, that's a good thing. Our National Park and Rec Conference is coming to Charlotte in October. And I think it's a good leadership role on the national level from a park perspective to say that we've made these kind of controls as well.
You earlier referenced the mess that some smokers and users of tobacco products make in the parks, and you've also said our parks are not your ashtrays.
Right.
Is cleanup from tobacco use significant? Does it cost a lot of money? Is it more than people dropping candy wrappers on the ground in the parks, et cetera?
Well, you know, I don't know the specifics of that. I mean, we don't collect cigarette butts and weigh them at the end of the year. But I will tell you, we pick cigarette butts out of our greenways. We pick them out of our flower beds. We pick them up in the walks that go through the parks and so forth. So when you see these things, we try and make sure that they're taken out of the parks as quickly as possible. But it's a problem. I mean, if you drive down our streets, you'll see people empty their ashtrays out of their car right in the middle of the street. And so a minority of people are disrespectful, But I would say the vast majority of smokers just believe when they're finished with their cigarette, they can simply throw it anywhere, which is unfortunate.
Larry emails, I am not a smoker. On average, I work out 3 days a week, ride 100 miles or more each week. My diet's very healthy. I do not like cigar or cigarette smoke. I hate it. However, I think that smoking restrictions have gone too far. Smoking restrictions in confined areas like airplanes, buses, and trains are good, but I do not believe there should be smoking restrictions in bars, restaurants, and especially outside. Long story short, smoking is a legal activity and should be treated as such. Either make smoking illegal or stop the restrictions. Which brings up the question, do smokers have rights?
Well, you certainly are entitled to smoke. You can make that choice. Mike, I think it would be irresponsible of us as policymakers to ignore the public health evidence that we have from our experts who tell us that this is a growing medical public health concern. For us to do nothing in response to that, to me, is not fulfilling our role. So, yes, smokers do have a right to smoke, but it's not an unlimited right.
How will this be enforced if it is adopted, and what will the penalties be if you are caught in a park or around a county building with a tobacco product?
You've caught me a little bit off kilter on this one, but our experience is that enforcement likely will not be much of a problem. As Jim mentioned, when people are notified that they shouldn't smoke, they tend to comply.
But there's no penalty. There will be no penalty on the books.
There will. There's a $25 fine is sort of the ultimate penalty. But as Commissioner Fuller mentioned, you know, we think of this really as social enforcement. People follow the rules. And I'm not just saying that. We know that from experience.
Very quickly, you think this will pass?
I think it will, yes.
And when will that happen?
It will happen, I believe, at our meeting on September 17th.
Trevor Fuller is chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Dr. Marcus Plesha is health director for Mecklenburg County. And James Gargis is the director of the Mecklenburg County Park and Rec. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike.